we're here because we want to study Rosicrucian philosophy. And when we say Rosicrucian philosophy, we say the philosophy that was taught by the Rosicrucian Fellowship in Oceanside, California. The reason we're studying this philosophy is so that we can understand reality better. A philosophy is only as good as it helps us to experience reality. If it is a beautiful intellectual philosophy and we don't understand reality any better, it's not worth very much. The reason why we want to understand reality is so that we can work in harmony with it. We want to work with what's going on, because all too often we are discordant and we work against what is going on. We're studying this philosophy to know reality so that we can serve the purposes of the cosmos. We each have a purpose, and humanity in general has a purpose. And through studying things like this, we begin to understand what our purpose is. Now, another name for the Rosicrucian philosophy is Christian mysticism. This means that we who are students and probationers of the Rosicrucian philosophy are aspirants to become mystics. This means, if we are mystics, it means we have an active inward life. We have an inner life that is very rich. We have a mystical life. That is one of the definitions of mysticism. Mysticism sees the world from within out, whereas materialism sees the world from without in, as Eddie explained so well this afternoon. Now, there are a lot of different mystical philosophies and schools of philosophy, but they don't all have the same preferences. They don't all have the same priorities. For example, some organizations try to promote universal brotherhood. That's not the Rosicrucian Fellowship. The Rosicrucian Fellowship teaches us to have first-hand experience. And if we have first-hand experience, and we experience the altruistic Christ love, we automatically have the brotherhood. We don't have to practice being brotherly. We just experience it. And it lives in us. Basically, in the Rosicrucian philosophy, we study so that we can live better lives. If we think about it, our lives are all we really have. And if we examine our life, not how much money we've made, not how popular we've been, but how we have lived our life in the spirit, that is the way we determine success or failure in life. Since we are mystical aspirants, whether we have experienced it completely or not, we all intuitively know that we are spiritual beings, that we are not limited to our physical existence, but that we are really spiritual beings. And spiritual beings are beings of consciousness. And for us, that is what it is all about. It is all about consciousness. In a way, you could even say that spirit is consciousness being conscious of its own being. And the creation is an activity of that consciousness being aware of its own consciousness. We read about spiritual consciousness. We get hints about it. We hear about deeper consciousness, or we hear about broader consciousness, and we hear about different varieties of consciousness. But the pertinent question becomes, do we experience those states of consciousness? Do we really experience those states of consciousness? That's an important question. What do we experience? Because if we're not experiencing those higher things, we're not successful. Doesn't mean that we're not becoming better people. Everybody is becoming a better person. But we are intentionally trying to be aspirants to initiate wisdom. And that's where we have to ask ourselves that very hard question. Max Heindel asked it all the time, not only about himself, but about those in the organization. He was worried that not a lot of people were becoming invisible helpers, or that they were becoming initiates, or even that they were becoming clairvoyants, because there weren't enough that were doing that. Now, it's a very, very hard thing, but we can do it. We are given the promise that anyone who persists in spiritual aspiration, anyone who has a high ethical and moral consciousness should be able to experience higher states of consciousness. So that brings us down to the nitty-gritty of it. Any one of us who has ever tried to change our consciousness, to deepen it, or to experience it, knows that it's not an easy thing. Even making ourselves do the work is not an easy thing, because there's always an alibi or some reason for not doing it. But what's the alternative? What else is there to do with our life that is really worthwhile? Because if consciousness is what it's all about, and we are on the verge of becoming divine beings, it's much to our betterment and the betterment of the cosmos for us to unfold a kind of consciousness that we can do things really well, without goofing up, without causing more harm, without causing more discord. What else is there to do? So we can take a good amount of time to try and change our consciousness. The alternative is to stay the way we are, to stay with our faults and with our imperfections and with our ignorance and with our misunderstanding. That's not a very pleasant alternative. In fact, it's not even a real alternative, because the Rosicrucian philosophy tells us there is no downtime in spiritual evolution. Either you're going forward or you're going backward. If you try to stand still and everything else is going forward, you're really going backward. We have to do it anyway. It is our destiny to become divine. We have agreed with that from the very beginning. That is our purpose. But attitude is all important. We all know that there are those irksome tasks that we have to do, things that are unpleasant. We have to tell people things they don't want to hear, and such like that. But it's so much better if we do it voluntarily, or if we do it freely, rather than being dragged into its kicking and screaming. So what we're talking about is trying to move forward in evolution, to participate with our consciousness in keeping things moving, in keeping things progressing. We really are part of the spiritual creation. Someday, it's going to be our duty to guide the earth in its orbit through the evolutionary creation. And so getting used to using our consciousness to progress things is what we're supposed to be doing. We're not just creatures. We're part of the creative hierarchy. Now, when we start thinking like this, some people might object to this line of thought. They might say, one can't command oneself to have divine mystical experiences. That's up to God. In part, that is true. But in many ways, we can develop the faculties and we can change our character so that it is inviting that God or that the Spirit would really want to work through us. And that's what our exercises are for, to make ourselves into a temple, to learn in our exercises to be responsive to the Spirit, so that when we are beckoned one way or another, when we are called, that we can hear it because we have practiced being responsive to it. So it is our work to work on perfection. We're actually commanded to do that. Christ in the Bible says, be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. So we're on a perfection quest. By the way, we're not going to say something really profound tonight. This is going to be rather light. And we won't get to any far-fetched things until Friday. And the talk on Friday will have the most far-reaching and far-fetched things that I can think of. And they're not for me, they're part of the most reaching philosophy. We'll get to that eventually. We can learn to function from a spiritual focus, not from a personal focus. If we take stock in ourselves, if we take inventory of our lives and we look at what we do, which we're supposed to do every day in retrospection, and every now and then we take a time and we sit down and look at our lives, I don't know if you're any different than me, but when I do that, I find my life is awfully profane. I think too much about things in this world, and it's too easy for me to forget the purpose. It's too easy for me to forget to listen for that still small voice. So this is something this is important. You probably figured it all out by now that this part of the talk is a pep talk. It is to get everybody enthused, and so that everybody wants to practice, and everybody wants to do spiritual exercises, so that everybody is eager to grow, so that everybody really wants to do something. There's nothing that prohibits us from any kind of valid spiritual exercise than our own lack of application. There's no other bar. You can throw us in prison and we can spend the rest of our life in prison and it should do nothing to affect our spiritual life. Our inward life, that is something that can be done anywhere and it isn't dependent on external conditions. In fact, in some ways, it might be easier to do it in prison where there are less distractions. Heaven is there for us to take. And it's just a matter of us wanting to take it. And when we take it so that we can give it, so that we can share. It's like one of those things that you see something so beautiful and you just can't keep it to yourself alone. It has to be for everyone. And so that's what we're saying. It's available to us. And we have to encourage ourselves to realize that if we put forth the effort, it will be there. We don't need any special equipment. everything we need, we were born with. We don't need aura machines or meditation helmets or anything like that. All we need to do is our consciousness. It's something that we can take joy in. It's something that we can take joy in that is thoroughly positive. I like ice cream. You know, ice cream tastes great, but it isn't great all the way around. It gets me great here, but it's not the same as spiritual activity. Spiritual activity is thoroughly good. And if we want to have a joyous life, there's nothing to keep us from doing it. The beautiful thing about it is that if we start doing spiritual work, we get perfect feedback, especially if the exercise that we're doing is retrospection. See, that's a special reminder to me. You know, like here I'm trying to talk about profound spiritual activity and then drop the chalk.
Not just chalk it up to experience.
Yes, we all get humbled when we need to be humbled. Even if we make mistakes, the mistakes are a positive for us because they just become stepping stones for learning to do things the right way or creating in a different way. I like jazz music, and jazz music is sort of like taking mistakes and making them something beautiful out of them. And it's a wonderful way of life. All we have to do is do it. That's the tough part of the problem. No doubt you've all figured out, I surely have figured out by now, that because I have been strongly encouraging people to do the inner work, I daren't lag now myself, because if you talk, you're announcing to the universe, hey, I'm talking about this stuff, and if you don't do it, you're going to really get hammered by it. You're going to see that you got on the map.
Could you not have told me this earlier?
Nobody ever said the spiritual life is an easier life. It's a more joyous life, and there are a lot of hard things that come down in it, but certainly not an easier life. So in this talk, we're going to talk a little bit in a very simple way about spiritual exercises in general. We'll talk a little bit at getting into the spirit of doing exercises. And in all of these talks, I'm not going to write them all on the blackboard, but there are going to be a series of criteria. And that series of criteria is something that anyone can use to determine what kind of exercise they're going to do. In case one wants to explore other exercises than those of the Rosicrucian Fellowship, they can do it. You just can't strike out anywhere. You have to have some basic principles. We'll do a little bit of that. So we'll generate some aphorisms to keep in mind when we practice spiritual exercises. Now, other talks are going to talk about specific types of exercises. Tomorrow night, we'll talk about a family of exercises. And on Wednesday night, we'll talk about what will probably be the hardest talk, because it is about facing God. It was like looking God in the eye in the act of prayer. That's not an easy thing to do, and we'll save that for Wednesday. And Thursday, we'll talk about retrospection, and Friday, we will talk about progressive exercises, showing how the simplest Rosicrucian exercises, if you carry them in a spiral method deeper and deeper, they are exceedingly advanced exercises. By now, you've noticed that I've used two different words. I have used the word practice and I have used the word exercise. And each of those two words connotes something different. And we'll try to look at both of them because each gives us an idea of what we're doing. Now, if we hear the word exercise, some things come to mind. High school gym class, we had to do push-ups and sit-ups and calisthenics and things like that. Those were exercises. Of course, they are only exercises for the dense physical body. And to some extent, they are to get the flow working better of the etheric body. The dense physical body is a spiritual body because it's an expression of God. So it is a spiritual body. It serves the spirit. In fact, at this time in the evolutionary creation, the dense physical body is our most perfect body. It's the most highly evolved, and it's the most serviceable, and it relates to this world. And in this world is where we are ripe for gaining evolutionary experience. It is in this world that we can do our greatest service. So it's important to do physical exercises. In fact, it's so important that I'm going to insist that tomorrow night after the talk is over that everybody walks 5 miles with me.
I know that.
It has to be voluntary. So we shouldn't look down on the dense physical body because it has limitations and because it relates to such a limited sphere. But this sphere is very important because the lessons here are very fundamental and they're very basic. Max Heindel says that when you have desire, will, clairvoyance, you can see the entirety of a book all at the same time. And you can pick out the parts that you want. That's very nice, but unless you have control of your consciousness and unless you have objectivity, that it's just a boggle. You get lost. Here we can only look at one page at a time. We can only look at something that is in front of us from one perspective. But that helps us to be objective about things. And the objectivity that we learn here, if we can look at things in a simple way here, we can carry that on into the higher worlds. So the fundamental, the very simple things that we do in this world are basic, and they are the building blocks on which everything else is built. We don't look down on abstraction, on addition and subtraction, because it's not calculus or analysis or something like that. We realize that we could never get to calculus or linear geometry or whatever unless we had the addition and subtraction first. And that's the way we have to think about our dense physical body. Sometimes we can understand these things by applying the Hermetic axiom, which is sometimes called the principle of analogy. As above, so below, what has gone before in heaven follows after on earth. Know this and rejoice. Beautiful line. I don't know that there's a line of poetry that's much better than that. The way analogy works, it's that our lifetimes, the life cycle, going through the different stages of life, are microcosms of the whole evolutionary creation. We begin slowly. We begin with an infantile consciousness, and then we reach a physical peak. And after we reach that physical peak, our physical bodies go into decline. But our consciousness and our mentality, our desires keep getting finer and finer, even though the physical goes into decline. And this is exactly how things go in the evolutionary creation. We are miniatures of the evolutionary creation. We are products of it. We're not something separate from it. So our lives are based on the same principles. And this is why it's really important with spiritual exercises that the spiritual exercises be based on cosmological principles so that everything that we do is harmonious with the cosmos, which isn't always the case right now. We have fallen. We have brought discord into the world, and we make many dumb mistakes again and again. Sometimes we intentionally do bad things. We don't want to stay that way. So the best thing we can do when we practice our spiritual exercises to unfold our consciousness is to base them on the principles that the cosmos is based on, because this automatically brings us back into harmony with the cosmos that we have deviated from. I'm lost in my notes now. But the way it works is usually at age 28, which is the end of the development stage or redevelopment stage of the mind, concrete mind, the physical body goes into decadence. If you're 28 years old and you want to become a jet pilot, they won't let you become a jet pilot in the Air Force, because at 28, you're already losing your reflexes. You're already losing your ability to do things. After age 28, every year you lose 0.5% of your muscle mass in your body, which means after 40 years, you have lost 20% of your muscle mass. You can reverse that to some extent by vigorous exercise and high-protein diets and things like that, but you can't reverse it all altogether. The physical body does rule into decadence. There's a principle in this. The universe that we live in, even in this dense physical world, is filled with change. It's dense with change. And therefore, with our consciousness, we have to attune ourselves to the change. Which means that as we get older, we have to be in touch with the age that we are at. We all know those people that are in their 50s and 60s and try to have girlfriends in their 20s. Or people who are in their 60s and in no good shape at all still try to wear stretch pants and act like they were young people. This is working out of harmony with the cosmos. Because in the same way that we live at the stage of life that we are in, that is very much like living with the stage of evolution that we are in. And we have to constantly change. If we don't change, we sort of die early in our consciousness. We think no more new thoughts. We don't keep up with what's going on. You see people like that, they become cranky old people or something of that nature. So we have to keep up as much as we can keep up in the maintenance of all of our bodies, especially the physical etheric bodies. We have to keep them in maintenance, and we have to use them. What is the common statement on the street that is very, very wise if it's taken in evolutionary context? It says, use it or lose it. If you don't use your consciousness, if you don't use your mind, you're going to lose it. Now, in the higher bodies, the desire body, concrete mind, and the different states of spirit, it's not the same. They don't go into decadence. You start repeating a desire, you'll repeat that desire again and again, and it'll only get stronger. So if we're talking about developing higher consciousness, when we use it, we actually strengthen it and we improve it. It's true, like for example, deep thinking. The more we think and the better we think so that our thoughts are wrapped around intuitions, we become much, much better at thinking. And the mind does not get tired. You can get brain fatigue in the physical body, but you can go further and further in the higher bodies, and the more that you perfect them, the more that you use them, the stronger they become. Again, this is such a thing, like you just said, somebody can be in prison and can have a spiritual life that is in no way interrupted just by doing the inner spiritual work. Now what we can see is that no matter what our age, we can have a spiritual life and we can do spiritual exercises and practices and we can improve no matter what our age. Wonderful thing. You don't have to get old and crotchety. If we are doing muscle building or anything like that, there is something that is exceedingly important. There is a story of a famous classical pianist, one of the most famous in all history. And he practiced every day. And they asked him why he always practiced and never missed a day. And he said, if I miss one day of practice, I notice it. If I miss 2 days of practice, the critics notice it. And if I miss 3 days of practice, the audience knows it. So this is something with spiritual things, you just can't do it for a few days and then take a few days off. You have to be regular and consistent. Every day, year after year after year, you have to have faith that even though you may not realize immediate visible progress that is taking place, but I can't see anyone doing the exercises every day for 20, 30 years that doesn't recognize some progress. The progress that they can see is a result of doing the exercises. What we're trying to do, we're trying to learn spiritual consciousness. And spiritual consciousness is not time consciousness, it's consciousness of eternity. And therefore the exercises to bring a spiritual, eternal spiritual wisdom into our consciousness, we have to have in the vehicles of consciousness, in our vital bodies, in our desire bodies, we have to build it in such a way that they have a continuity, that they can be expressions of the Spirit, and that they can deliver experiences of this world of the Spirit in a way that is consistent with the consciousness of the Spirit. For the most part, we are working in blind faith. But there's nothing wrong with working in blind faith. If we had never fallen, we would never have lost the clairvoyance, and we never would have doubted. But because we can doubt, and our doubts are answered, we are better people. And because we can believe and follow our belief and have faith even when we're in the blind, it means that we have a far superior kind of faith than if we had never gone through the fall. So there are some things about the fall that, as horrendous as it is for us to suffer as much as we suffer, and there's a lot of suffering in the world, there are still some very wonderful things about it that can come about that we never would have had or never would have realized them to the degree that we realize them now because of moving through the fall. All right. This isn't exactly what the notes are, but it'll have to do. It's sometimes amazing to me what happens, you know, like, the way I do the notes for plots is I sit for several hours in deep concentration and I focus on something, and sometimes it's an idea that spreads out in all directions and you just stay focused on it, and then you understand the salient points of it and you understand the various relevancies of different things and you just sit there in that deep concentration. Unfortunately, when you're talking to a number of people and it's a public event, you can never get into that same kind of deep concentration because you have to be thinking about the audience. But then what happens is if you're really giving yourself, you're interacting with the audience. And when you interact with the audience, then you pick up things from them so that it can be expressed in a better way ever. All right, let's look a little bit at time. Let's continue to do that and look at time in some other ways with regard to spiritual exercise. Cause and consequence happen in time. And that was a really very nice thing that Eddie talked about cause feeding consequence and consequence feeding cause. And that there is a circular kind of thing. That's one of the most beautiful presentations I've heard for a very long time. But when you have cause and consequence in time, you have experiences. When you have experiences, especially if they're painful experiences, you wake up and you have realization. And once you have those realizations, they're irreversible. You can't unexperience something. When you know something, you know it. If you had never heard music before, and then suddenly you heard music, you could never say to yourself, there isn't such a thing as music, because you're changed forever by the experience. So time in relation to cause and consequence in spiritual exercises or any exercises is important. For example, if you've just played a strenuous football game, that's not the time that you come home and lift weights, because you have fatigued your vital body and you've clogged your dense physical body and you're tired and you're near exhaustion. That is, again, an example of how the physical etheric bodies are different than the higher bodies. They don't get tired out. Desire forms can be disintegrated by things like retrospection or by going through extreme pains or things like that, or by ignoring them for a long time, like if you 10,000, 20,000 years, you ignore a desire that long and it tires out. But for the most part, what we're talking about here is the higher forms do not break down. And the more we use them, the stronger they become. This gives us an incentive. If we try to think, which is a very, very hard thing to do, to think and to think thoughts that are completely new, it's hard. But we realize that if we practice, we're going to get better. There's no doubt about it. No matter how slow we are, no matter how much we fight ourselves, we're going to get better. So there is no reason why we should not practice thinking, why we should not practice trying to feel different kinds of emotions. Now, in some of these things, there is a mistaken notion that Max Heindel points out very clearly. That misnotion is that all we have to do is develop the higher vehicles and live in those higher vehicles and everything will be fine. Max Heindel tells us that even though those higher vehicles, like the desire body and the mind, have very remarkable capacities, we're capable of all sorts of things in them, and they have many fewer limitations, they're still very much unevolved. We have a lot to do here yet, and it'll be a long time before the desire body and the mind are really developed. So, again, this tells us it's going to be a long time in coming, and then we just have to work patiently and patiently. And after a while, what happens? You enjoy doing the work. You enjoy working on consciousness. When you do that, you know, you have a sense of the spirit, and even though it may not show up in this lifetime, you know that what you're doing is going to pay off. It's going to result in something. So there is no reason why we shouldn't keep on practicing and practicing. Our dense physical bodies are, as we said earlier, our most cosmologically perfect bodies. And the work that we do here is finalization. There's no doubt about it. If you get sick and you're having all kinds of pain, you can't lie to yourself and say, oh, this is just happening to me. I didn't do the kind of thoughts or desires or actions that produce this kind of condition. You can't do that. You can't lie to illness. When you are what you are, it comes out and you know it. So for this reason, the Rosicrucian philosophy, even though it teaches that the progress spiritually is slow, it is important that we realize how clearly we can learn things here, how we can finalize them without a doubt. And so the spiritual things that we bring out in our exercises here are something that, again, are foundational for our entire evolution ahead of us. For this reason, almost all of the exercises in Rosicrucian philosophy relate to this time, to right here, and right now. This is not like some philosophies that try to do spiritual exercises to escape this world. We are not, mysticism in the Rosicrucian philosophy is not escapism. We are here to fulfill divine purposes. And if we unfold great spiritual insights, if we unfold seership, or if we unfold magical power so that we can do wonderful creative things, we don't just skip out of here. We are here until everybody can fulfill their part in the purposes of this world. We're not in this for ourselves alone. After all, it's God's creation. We're lucky enough to just participate in it, and our experience in this participation becomes feedback for the universal spirit. Because the universal spirit laid out this glorious divine plan, and we get to live it out, and we get to improvise within it, it's all of the different viewpoints that we bring back from that very same plan. But if we try to skip out of here, we're not feeding back. Jesus, something almost like that. You know, when I said that, it rang in my consciousness. You know, there's an old hymn, I don't know if you know it. This is my Father's world.
Remember that?
Yeah, that was going through my mind. And, oh my God, I'm becoming like a preacher.
I like the song.
Yes, it is a beautiful song. You can sing a solo.
Solo, you can't hear me.
So the Rosicrucian exercises will bring us transcendent experiences. One cannot become a Rosicrucian initiate without knowing that one is divine. That is part of the initiation. You know who you really are and who you really are is a divine being. But it isn't only for some gratitude, some egoistic self-satisfaction that we do the exercises. We do them to serve the divine. Yes, in the Rosicrucian philosophy, we build and we organize the soul body so that we can step out of this physical body and go into the inner worlds. But we can only do that by the work that we do here and the work that we do now. The spiritual life is not in the future. The spiritual life is not only in the other worlds. We are here. We are very important beings in this world. We are the only self-conscious beings in this world that can take the spiritual understanding and bring it all the way down to final completion. The bears in the woods can't do it, and the plants can't do it. We are the only ones that can self-consciously do that, and that is our service. And if performing that service through the spiritual exercises, that's what we are intended to do. Now, in spiritual exercises, time and times become very important. Earlier, we mentioned that our lifetime is a microcosm of the evolutionary cycle. Actually, each day is a microcosm of that same evolutionary cycle. And this is something that isn't in the notes anywhere, but if we go into our spiritual exercises, so that if we go deeper into prayer and then come back out and then go deeper yet into prayer and then come back out, that is based on the same principle as the way the universal spirit comes into the creation. So everything, even the days, are like the cosmos. Dawn is like birth in the life cycle. And sunset is like death in the life cycle. The light and the psychic atmosphere are different at different times of the day. And we, being part of that atmosphere, are more or less in tune with the times of the day. And if we can adjust our lives or take advantage of this, we can do much more with our spiritual exercises if we are doing them as work. Because as work, we do our spiritual, we're not just practicing. This is for real. If we are doing healing prayer, we're not doing healing prayer just to improve as prayers. We're doing healing prayer to heal. And we're trying to help. And so we want to do those things at the time that are most efficacious. Now, midnight is probably the best time of the day for deep devotional activity and for penetrating deep into the worlds and bringing back spiritual energy. But most people are not awake at that time. Our life in the world doesn't allow that. Now, the Rosicrucian spiritual exercises are based on these cosmological processes, and they are based on these cycles. They're based on the stuff, on the means whereby our bodies have been built, so that the exercises are in harmony with what we are. You can't be something other than you really are. In astrology, there are people that would just as soon have somebody else's horoscope rather than be who they are and be the best them that they can be, which is kind of a funny thing. Now, two of the primary exercises of the Rosicrucian Fellowship are based on these cycles. If you look in the Cosmic Perception, you'll find there are all sorts of passages and sections on cycles. The exercises that I'm thinking of are called the morning exercise and the evening exercise. it would probably be better to call them the rising exercise and the retiring exercise whenever you awake or whenever you go to sleep, because not everybody has that morning and evening cycle. Everybody does have a circadian cycle, which is a 24-hour cycle, but not everybody's coincides with the sun. We'll talk a little bit more about these exercises in a little bit, but the whole idea is practicing at the moment we rise and at the moment we retire is an indication that these are cosmological exercises that fit right into the same pattern that is in the cosmos. I'm just thinking, oh, I'll get my thought. We'll be done in another 2 hours and 15 minutes. Let's break from that for a second and go into a little side trip. Suppose a composer of music has a tune in his inner consciousness. And then suppose that he writes it down. He's capable of what he hears within him. He's capable of notating it and putting it down. And then he can write an orchestration for it, say like maybe for a piano solo. When, especially in modern music, when a composer does this and he gives it to the pianist can't just play it at first. It takes a long time. Sometimes there are quite a few exercises that are involved before the person can play it. Sometimes the musician actually has to visualize and figure out where his fingers have to go. And that takes some work. I had a friend that used to write and compose guitar music, and there were almost impossible holes that you had to do on the neck of the guitar to be able to play those things, and you had to visualize it. But he said, anything that you can visualize, you can play. And he could play phenomenal things. But even though you can play anything you can visualize, you have to make your body capable of doing that. You have to build the muscles. You can't reach certain ways unless you have the muscles that can do that. And you have to develop the neuromuscular control. So this is not something that happens overnight. If a pianist is learning a difficult piece of music, it sometimes is a matter of weeks before he's physically capable of actually even playing music. And then it has to be interpreted. So this is what spiritual exercises are like. Now, adepts, like the elder brothers, who are highly experienced and that are skilled in inner work, design the exercises. And they design these exercises for us to develop exactly what we need for our stage of development. Now, it takes a while. For me, before I actually learned, well, I must take that back. When I first got involved with the spiritual path, I made very rapid progress. And that was due to retrospection. I was so keen on retrospection that I went to bed 3.5 or 4 hours earlier than normal. And I retrospected everything. And I made major, major changes in my consciousness. But as I made major changes in my consciousness, I got more and more responsibilities. And with more and more responsibilities, that meant less time for retrospection. And then there was a slowdown for quite a few years. In fact, the results of spiritual exercises, even though I always got wonderful insights, for example, in doing the morning exercise, always new things coming up and understandings that I never ever would have realized were there before there was an appreciable difference in my consciousness, and one that wasn't part of the aging process and that wasn't part of the maturation process, but that was due to the actual work that I was doing in the exercises. It was over 25 years. It's going to be a long, slow process. This is one of the things about the Rosicrucian philosophy. There is an old maxim about spiritual things, and that is, fast is slow, and slow is fast. That people who try to make a lurch effort, when I lived at Monte Ecclesia, there was a brilliant man, most interesting man. He was in the Chicago school system, and his name was Morris Sonnenschein, and he was brilliant. But he belonged to a very strict Jewish family. And he read the Cosmo Conception, and he began following it. And his family, when he became a Christian, and he started following the Rosicrucian philosophy, they held a funeral for him. And he was dead for the family after that. And he was living at Monte Ecclesia when I worked there. I think it was about 1967 or 1968, something like that. But it was a pitiful sight to see. What happened was he saw that the sun was coming to Saturn in his horoscope. I mean, Saturn was coming to the sun in his horoscope, and he thought he was going to have old age consciousness. And so he figured, if I'm going to have a spiritual experience, I better have it now. And he forced something open. But all the rest of his life, he was like a spastic. He was somewhat in touch with this world and somewhat not in touch with this world. It was a pitiful thing to see, because here was somebody that was really very bright and really, but there's good that came out of it, even though that he harmed your psychic constitution. It was good that came out of it, because he was very, very compassionate after that. Because, you know, that was something, the suffering from his own mistakes made him more understanding of the suffering of other people. And he really did become more of a heart person. And that's the problem with brilliant people. They sometimes are so brilliant that they stay in their brain, and they give lip service to living a life in the heart, but they don't really do it. And after that, he lived more of a life in the heart. So it is fast is slow, and slow is fast. If you keep steady, 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 you're gonna get there as fast as it is possible to get there. This is a part of the game for me. It hasn't happened with this group, but I try to see how many people I can put to sleep in a given time. And I try to see how many bladders I can outlast.
If you get one to sleep twice, does that count for two?
Don't worry, the mosquitoes are keeping us awake.
So, steady, rhythmic, regular, never say die, keeping at it is, we're going to get there. There's no question about it at all. Now, this metaphor of using musical exercises for a pianist works very nicely, because we are developing ourselves, because it's been so long since we've been conscious in the ethers that most of us have forgotten how to be conscious of the ethers, and it takes a long time for us to reattune. Max Heindel tells us that when a person becomes a waking, conscious, invisible helper, they're useless for a half a year, because they're so disoriented when they're completely out of their body, awake on the other side, that they're discombobulated. And then before they get an understanding that they can be as useful as they were before they became a self-conscious invisible helper, feel it, it takes that long of a time. Of course, when they get there with full waking consciousness after that orientation period is over, they're much, much more valuable, much more effective. So there is a sequence of how we go about things. We have to learn when and how to unfold and develop different things. I got a little story that I can tell you that relates to that. Many years ago, I used to study handwriting analysis. And I was hanging around at the Students' Union at the university here, and a pretty young woman comes to me and she says, "I hear you do handwriting analysis." And because she was pretty, I said, "Yes." And I said a lot of other things I shouldn't have said.
No.
Because I looked at the handwriting and I said, "In some ways you are a very timid individual." And another thing I said is that you have criminal tendencies. I said a few other things, and she said, "I'm under indictment right now for theft." And it was perfectly obvious in the handwriting. But there is a sequence of timing, and it's important. For example, suppose you have a person that has tendencies to be criminal, and they're timid. Obviously, you have them correct the criminality before you correct the timidity, because otherwise you'll have a temerarious criminal that's unafraid of anything, that'll just go out there and do things. And this is why the spiritual exercises for the Rosicrucian philosophy, why the devotion and why especially the retrospection are so important, is because they unfold the moral and ethical qualities. It's not because we are too stupid that we are not completely unfolded. It is because within us we still have too many seeds of wrongdoing from too many past lives that we can act on. We still have bad tempers, we still say nice things about other people that are actually harming them. And if we are so loving, and if we are so pure morally and ethically, the little babies will love us, and then animals will come to us like they did to St. Francis, there's no problem unfolding the spiritual powers. If you've got that much love, you've got that much patience, and you'll take that much time to do what you have to do in the practices to unfold things spiritually. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about sequential time and how you do what thing you do first. This is again a repeat, and I don't mind repeating some things. We do spiritual exercises to live better lives. We do spiritual exercises to live better lives. If we aren't becoming better human beings, if we aren't becoming more helpful, more loving, more kind, our spiritual life is a failure. I don't care how brilliant somebody is, I don't care how far they can read in the desire world, unless they're becoming more kind, more loving, more helpful to people, they're not having a successful spiritual life. Now, when we're talking about time, our life can be broken into two activities: waking activities and sleeping activities. And this is on every level, waking and sleeping. As Eddie pointed out in his talk, there are periods of active manifestation, and there are periods of chaos. And each one is a different kind of activity. Now we're going to talk with very dangerous brevity, because this is way longer than I wanted this to be. We're going to talk about waking and sleeping. We do our exercises when we retire and when we wake in the morning for very special reasons. We're only going to go into a few of the reasons now, because we'll go into them later during the course of the week. Now, I used to work around electronics technicians, and signals. This is plus voltage, this is negative voltage, and this is zero state. And if you have an electronic device, you send out signals. This may be so many milliseconds long that something is on, and then it's off, or then it goes to negative voltage, and then it comes back up again. You might say waking activity is like the positive signal, and that sleeping activity is like the negative signal. Now, what spiritual exercises do is help us to live our life better. It not only makes us better people, but it helps us to live our life better, because it is done at such a time that it helps us where we can do the most good. I'll just briefly talk about the morning exercise that occurs when we wake in the morning. Now, there are some things about the morning exercise. When we do it, we do no movement at all. We wake up and we don't even open our eyes. And in the Rosicrucian philosophy, we focus our attention on the opening verses of St. John's Gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by it, and without it was not anything made that was made. In it was life, and the life was the light of ones. And the light shined in darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. That's just the beginning. But we focus at the beginning of our day, at the beginning of the cosmos. Again, this is, we're making our lives to be analogous with the whole cosmos. And the whole idea is that when we have been asleep at night, first of all, the desire body gets harmonized by the greater desire world. In the greater desire world, even though there are all kinds of nasty entities and things like that, the harmony, the divine harmony, permeates the desire world in such a wonderful way that our desire bodies become harmonized. And then we go to work on our vital bodies. We cleanse them, and we reharmonize them, and then we cleanse, and we work on the dense physical body. In the dense physical body, when we are asleep at night, it's catabolism. When we are awake in the day, it's anabolism. At this moment, when we wake, our physical bodies are as clean as they're going to be, and the vital body is as clean as it's going to be, and the desire body and the higher vehicles are harmonized. Now, the object is to bring the spiritual consciousness into this world. We are to bring, so to speak, God into this world. And there is no better time to do that than when we first awaken, because everything's clean. if we once start moving around, or if we once start thinking about doing things in the physical world, we've already set the process into work, you know, where that starts clogging the physical body. And it's hard to bring the spirit all the way through under such circumstances. And so this is the time where we try to get the dense physical body and the interpenetrating vital body to accommodate themselves to the higher vehicles and to get the higher vehicles to be functioning perfectly in the dense physical body. And in effect, what we are doing is we are going all the way back to the beginning of the entire creation. And with our consciousness, we are bringing the beginning right into the beginning of our day. And so in a microcosmic way, we are giving new birth to the cosmos every time we do this. Now the effect of this is that instead of just waking up, there is an effect that is called spiking in electronics. Normally when an electronic device changes state, it doesn't just come up and go at the new voltage level, it goes up higher and then it settles into that state. And if an ordinary person just wakes up, but a person who does the morning exercise raises the consciousness higher so that all the rest of the day they function at a little bit higher level because of what they have gained through that deep experience. The exercise for going to sleep is called retrospection. It is that when we go to bed, we try to relax, and that's dangerous right then and there, because when we relax, it's easy to go to sleep, and that lower nature would rather have us go to sleep than face our sins of the day. It's a very difficult thing. And then we look at the events of the day in reverse order. But it is a multiple reversing. We're going to spend a whole night talking about this, so what we're talking about now is really quick. We reverse things, we see things from effect back to cause, the very thing that Eddie was talking about earlier today. And we reverse the perspective. We see it as the other person saw it. Like, have I been clear in explaining to you? And I'll have to look from your point of view and rather than from my own point of view. And with that kind of reversal, that's the way things work in the desire body. When you're in the desire world, your consciousness is expanded to the extent of the cosmos, and you're looking with great objectivity back on what you did in the daytime. It's just like what is called being a grandstand quarterback. The people who are watching the television, whether it's American football or soccer football, you can see all those things when you're in that great objective perspective, but when you're actually in the game, it's much harder because you're caught in the subjective perspective of it. And so you see your whole day backwards in time, and you see your whole day backwards in perspective and in consequence compared to cause. And what this does is it neutralizes things in our desire bodies. experiences are neutralized, the spirit can see the experience out of them. The soul material is brought out of them by looking, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever played pool. To some extent, if you don't have the skill to do everything, you sort of look the ball into the hole. It's a kind of dead reckoning. And you see the experience out of your experiences. You take the essence of that into your consciousness by looking at it. And it neutralizes, so you don't carry your hang-ups around. There is the story that somebody just told me within the last 24 hours about this old sage and his student were sitting by the riverbank. They were resting because they were going to wade across the river to the other side and continue on their journey. And as they're sitting there, a beautiful, voluptuous young woman comes up and says, "I'm afraid of water. Will you help me get across?" And the sage immediately jumps up and says, "Yes, I'll help you." And he picks her up, carries her across to the other side. His student goes along with him. He sets her down. And she says, "Thank you," and goes on her way. And all the day it's bothering the student of the sage. Finally, in the evening, when they're sitting at their campfire, he says to them, "But Master, you touched that beautiful woman. She was gorgeous. She was voluptuous. And you took her in your arms." And the sage said to him, "I only carried her across the river for a few minutes. You've been carrying her all afternoon." And this is the way a lot of things happen in our lives. We carry things in us. Some people carry grudges that they carry for many, many years, and they don't let go of them. And retrospection, when we really feel it, allows us to let go of them. Now, obviously, if we're doing this consciously, we're doing a much more effective job. And so then, instead of just going down, we overshoot and we go way down, and that gives us a level that our bodies are more rested, and that we can work as invisible helpers, or we can be trained in the inner worlds, or do all the things that we do as a result of the exercises. So this is another example of saying how the Rosicrucian exercises are based on the same principles that the cosmos is based on. The first thing that happens after we die is we go through the retrospection. We don't do the creative work in third heaven until we've done the purgatorial work in the lower desire world. And these are principles that we're going to be talking about for all of the rest of these talks. We've gone about as far as we're going to go for this talk. Unfortunately, we didn't talk much about the feeling of satisfaction and the feeling of belonging that comes with doing spiritual exercise. And there were a lot of other things that we could have brought up, but we didn't bring them up. But from time to time, I'll give you little hints on them, and then you can do all a lot more thinking yourself. In the next talk, tomorrow evening, we're going to talk about a whole school or a whole family of exercises. And that's tomorrow, and for now, let's just close with the Rosicrucian student prayer.
God, increase our love for thee, that we may serve thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our God and our Redeemer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
By the way, something happened when Eddie gave a very good talk today. People clapped. And in here we don't clap, because if we clap, it breaks up the etheric vibrations. So we'll do it for Eddie again. We go like this. Okay.
So move that energy.
Richard. Yes.
A simple question, and obviously not the bulk of your talk, but you got me kind of thinking when you were talking about, does anyone in here think that illness would not be brought about by themselves? How does it work with a genetic tendency or an illness? Obviously it's a carryover, but how does that work over with a group? Because genetic also has to do with a certain group that you come from. And how far back does that group go?
When you get the genetic materials from your father and your mother, there are 2 billion possibilities. And so you have a lot of leeway. Recording angels have a lot of leeway. And I think that we place too much emphasis on the microcosm and not the macrocosm. The DNA just says what can and cannot be done. It's the final details. But it is the bigger picture, the cosmic archetype, and the general field of consciousness that is more important than looking at the DNA. So there are many ways, combinations that the DNA can produce exactly the body that is needed to reproduce. There are ample opportunities for the recording angels to bring that about.
And I guess if we're all really related far back,
it's the entire... When there are genetic predispositions in a family, we are brought to that family because we have a destiny with that family, and that includes a physical destiny. And we have done something together. If in the past we were a gang of bandits or something like that, we'll be born into a family that we get our recompense, and if it's supposed to be a physical recompense, we'll have that genetic tendency to do that way. Like, for example, I imagine something like that may be behind those people that have that genetic predisposition to have 12 fingers rather than 10. And it's hard for them, it's hard to coordinate 12 fingers than it is to coordinate 10. And so, like if you were manipulating things before and then you are deprived, and not, I won't say that I said that.
No, this is just ideas,
people,
you know.
12 finger people are all, but that's, you know, that's a speculation of the way something like that could work.
Yeah, the DNA people try to give you the impression that DNA is everything there is, and all the DNA comes from your mom and your dad. But inside our skins, there's lots of DNA that didn't come from your mom and dad.
Oh, that's true.
A lot of DNA that doesn't come from your mother or father.
Some of it came from ice cream.
And kitty cats.
I was told that if all of the human molecules were removed from your form, just from the mites alone, you would see a hazy aura just in your form.
Wow, I believe it.
Rod tells the story, and he can even punch it to the paper, mm-hmm. that there are people that have no brains. Mm-hmm. And they function in the world, and they're not idiots or anything like that. They're not bright, brilliant people, mm-hmm. but they function in the world with no brain.
Mm-hmm. So, what do you mean they have no brain?
Physically, no brain.
Physically, didn't develop.
They have a brain stem, perhaps. So there are parts that.
Son's brain.
So yeah.
So it keeps the body. Back.
Phantom brain.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd drive from here to there without a brain.
Wow.
Really?
It may not drive.
Like this.
There could be limitations.
As far as I'm concerned, there seem to be a lot of brainless people.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What do you call this one?